kind of a fun little song, isn't it? Béla Bartók wrote it for children to play. It sounds like it goes all over the place, but actually it is a piano setting of a Hungarian folk song. Now you've heard American folk songs, Yankee Doodle went to town riding on a pony, or Oh Susanna, oh don't you cry for me. Those are American folk songs. Well, the song you heard was a Hungarian folk song, a piano arrangement of a Hungarian folk song. Listen to it again. Now that you have heard it once, and now that you know it's a song, see if you can hum the melody as it is played. On this side of the tape, we are going to study three things. Number one, Bartók's inseparable connection with the folk music of his country. Number two, a whirlwind overview of Bartók's life. And finally, number three, Bartók's intense patriotism and love of freedom. When Béla Bartók was a young 23-year-old man, his travels as a young pianist and composer took him through the countryside of his homeland of Hungary. As he listened to the peasants sing, he noticed that he had not heard their songs before. At least two ideas came to him at this time. Number one, in these folk songs of his motherland, he could find a wealth of material from which to create great musical masterpieces. And number two, because of the modernization of Hungary, if someone did not write these songs of his country down, they may be lost forever. He called up a friend, Zoltán Kodály, and the two of them picked up a new Edison talking machine, or phonograph, and with this record player in hand, they went out from the big city and into the country to have the peasants sing into their Edison phonograph. They wanted to record the rich treasury of Hungarian folk songs before they were gone forever. Now a peasant is what the Europeans called their farmers. Unlike the farmers we have in America, the peasants in those days were not usually educated, and they were very, very poor. Not all the peasants were willing to sing into Bartók's talking machine. At other times, a small crowd of peasants would come to watch the amazing machine work. Bartók wrote a letter to a friend describing how frustrating it was to get the peasants to cooperate at times. He even included a conversation that he had with one of them. Let's listen as young Béla tries to get an old woman, whom he calls Auntie, to sing into the machine.
The neighbor's wife here said you'd know the sort of old songs you learned in your youth from the old folks.
Me? Old songs? The gentleman mustn't pull my leg.
But look here, this isn't a lark. I'm speaking quite seriously. I've come from far away, very far away, from Budapest, just to look for these old, old songs that are known only hereabouts.
Well, then, what do they do with those old songs, then? Are they going to be put in the newspaper?
Not at all. The point of this work is to preserve these songs, to put them down in writing. Because if we don't write them down, people won't know later what used to be sung here in our day. Because, you see, young folk know quite different songs. They don't even have any use for the old ones. They don't even learn them, though they're much lovelier than the ones made nowadays. Well, isn't that right? So 50 years from now, no one will know that they even existed if we don't write them down now.
Is that so? No, I still don't believe it.
But just look at this booklet, Auntie. See, I've written down all this. This one was sung by Mrs. Gago, and this by Mrs. Kosa. Well, you know them also, don't you?
Oh, my day is over. It's not for an old woman to spend her time singing such songs. All I know now are church songs.
After such a long conversation, Bartók didn't get anything out of the lady, except for church songs, which he didn't want. However, this woman did refer him to a neighbor. Bartok went there and found that the lady knew so many folk songs that she could sing them all day long without repeating any. Bartok became very excited about his work. In these folk songs, Bartok felt that he had the ideas for a new musical style and beginning. His plan was to learn the folk songs and their style so well that it would become second nature to him. At that point, he could compose new music, music that would infuse the classical art forms with the beautiful Hungarian folk tunes and style. After 14 years of scouring the countryside for folk songs, Bartok had collected 2,721 Hungarian folk songs, 3,500 Romanian songs, and 3,000 Slovak songs. That's 9,221 songs that he collected. Can you imagine the time it would take to just sing 9,000 songs, not to mention the travel and arguments with aunties to collect them? Shortly after beginning the work of collecting the folk songs, Bartok and his friend Kodai set 20 of them to music. You heard one of these piano settings at the beginning of the tape. They had great hopes of making them very popular. Unfortunately, it took 32 years to sell their first 1,500 copies. They wanted to publish more, but their publisher was not interested. Bartok was destined to become one of those composers that had to die before his works became very popular. Now these pieces are known and played in many parts of the world. Before we discuss Bartok's early life, let's listen to another of Bartok's settings of a Hungarian folk song. Perhaps you have played this one before, or will play it in the future. It's a very famous one. It is called Drinking Song. Bartok was born in 1881 in a small town in Hungary, which is now a part of Romania. He died in New York in 1945. He had lived to be 64 years old. Now that we have his birth and death out of the way, let's fill the gap in between. When he was born, Béla's father was the principal at an agricultural school. His mother was also a teacher. Both parents were amateur musicians. So when, at age 5, Bartok began piano lessons from his mother, his talent was quickly recognized. About this time, an incompetent doctor vaccinated Bartok with a contaminated smallpox vaccine. He broke out with a rash that to him was so embarrassingly ugly, he did not want to go outside. He didn't want other little boys to stare and to make fun of him. So, for entertainment, he practiced the piano. Now, I know some of you are saying, boy, that kid must have been really deprived of entertainment if that's all he could think of doing. But working hard and practicing the piano can be a lot of fun and very uplifting. It was for 6-year-old Béla. When Béla was 7 years old, his father died. Now his mother had to work outside the home to provide for the family. That is a very difficult thing to do, to be mother and provider. At first, she taught piano lessons in school. Perhaps you have heard of the expression, behind every great man is a great woman. In Béla's case, it was a very devoted and loving mother. His mother kept changing teaching jobs to enable her to obtain the finest teachers for her son. If she heard of a good piano teacher who could help her son, she would find a job in the city where the teacher lived. She wanted to do this because she sensed the musical greatness of her son. What a remarkable and selfless woman. At age 10, Béla began playing in public. Through his teenage years, many people predicted a great future for Bartok. Béla Bartok's first compositions were not very well received during his lifetime. He spent so much time with the rustic, even barbaric rhythms and discordant sounds of Hungarian folk tunes that although he could understand his work, few others could. They found the sounds too percussive, too harsh. Orchestra members found the music too difficult to play well. Bartók didn't help much. After the Budapest Orchestra had tried to play his first suite as a favor to the young composer, Bartók was angry at how poorly they played. Bartók went home and wrote them a letter that said, "I must, under the circumstances, declare that I would be very grateful to you if you would never, never perform any of my compositions ever again." This type of attitude was common among many of the avant-garde or progressive composers of the first half of the 20th century. Consequently, they frequently found it difficult to find anyone who would play their pieces. Since Bartók could not make a living as a composer, he supported his young family by playing piano concerts and by teaching. However, he was not a very good teacher. Not that he couldn't have been a good teacher, it's just that he was more interested in his own research than in his students. About this time, his son Peter was ready to take piano lessons. Bartók did not like the current method books for teaching children, so he wrote his own series of 153 pieces and called them Microcosmos, which means literally small world, or in Bartók's own words, the world of the little ones, the children. Perhaps you have studied these pieces from Microcosmos. It is interesting to note that Bartók, as a piano teacher, believed that a student should start out singing before learning to play the piano. If you are studying Music Wonderful Music's The Magic of Inner Hearing, you are following the same approach of Bartók and Zoltán Kodály. You must be able to hear it with your mind or audiate it before you can play music well. As time passed, Bartók's life, as well as everyone's life in Europe, became affected by the political event. Now please turn to page 78 in your Magic of Inner Hearing book, or find a map of Europe. Find and place your finger on Hungary. This is where Bartók lived. Now find and place your finger on Germany. In the 1930s, this is where Hitler lived. When Hitler first came into power, very few saw what an evil man he was. Many thought him to be the promised Messiah in a first or second coming. Bartók and many other people, educated people, saw Hitler for what he was. Now place your finger on Russia. Can you find it? Russia was led by Stalin at this time. Stalin's cruelty to his people made Hitler look like an altar boy. Stalin killed millions of his own people to protect his own power. He wanted to take over the world like Hitler. Now find Italy. Italy was also ruled by a man who wanted to rule the world. Their leader's name was Mussolini, another very cruel dictator. Bartók was surrounded by cruel leaders who wanted to rule his country. As much as he loved Hungary, he hated the new government's worse. In 1940, Béla Bartók could not tolerate the German Nazis anymore and the threat that they posed to him and his country. He saw the overthrow of the Austrian government and could see that Hungary was soon to follow. Like so many other musicians, writers, scientists, and artists, Bartók took his family, fled Europe, and came to America. America at this time was high on Glenn Miller, Benny Goodman, The Wizard of Oz, and Judy Garland. If the Europeans could not understand Bartók's music, the Americans had an even more difficult time with it. But it is to our credit that we tried. At first, Bartók could not find work. Bartók came to America depressed over his financial situation. How was he going to feed his family? It would take time. American musicians, aware of Bartók's talent, helped him land a job at Columbia University. orchestra directors commissioned him to compose new works. After several years in America, Bartok's music began to be accepted. He was writing some of his greatest masterworks. It was at this time, the peak of his career, that Bartok contracted leukemia, a dreaded form of cancer. Bartok was told by his doctors that he needed to go to the hospital. Bartok begged for more time, saying that he wanted to finish a composition for his wife first, the third piano concerto. He only had 17 measures left. Couldn't he stay at home one more day? The doctors refused. He needed to be in the hospital. He worked on the composition until it was time to walk out the door. In the hospital, he remarked to the doctor, "I am only sorry that I have to leave with my baggage so full." Bartok did leave with a full baggage a short time later. After 5 years in the United States, he died on September 26, 1945. Before Bartok left Hungary for the United States, he wrote a will. In it is one paragraph that gives us an idea of how much he valued freedom and hated tyranny. Two streets in Budapest, the capital of Hungary, had been named after Hitler and Mussolini. This did not jive with Bartok, who wrote,
"If, after my death, they want to name a street after me, or to erect a memorial tablet to me in a public place, then my desire is this. As long as there are two streets in Budapest named after Hitler and Mussolini, and further, as long as there is in Hungary or any square or street, or is to be, named for those two men, then neither square nor street nor public building in Hungary is to be named for me, and no memorial tablet is to be erected in a public place."
Bartok composed many works for piano, orchestra, stage, choir, voice, and chamber works. Among his most famous is a work called Cantata Profana. It had its first performance in London in 1934. He planned to write two or three more cantatas with the underlying theme of the Brotherhood of Nations, all nations living together in peace and harmony. You can understand why this theme would be in his mind. To conclude this tape, you are going to hear the libretto or story of Cantata Profana. It is based on an old Romanian story of stags. Now, for those of you who are not outdoorsmen or outdoorswomen, a stag is a large male deer. It is a symbolic story of freedom. After you hear the story, you may wonder how it relates to the Brotherhood of Nations, how it relates to freedom. Bartok left the interpretation for the story for you to figure out, just like much of his music. As you listen, try to answer the following questions. What do the brothers represent? What does the father represent? What does the magic bridge represent? Listen carefully to the story and discuss the answer with your teacher, parents, or friend. Be prepared to think hard as the ancient story is being read. Cantata Profana.
Once there was an old man whose treasure was 9 strong and handsome sons. The 9 sons thought nothing of work, neither trade nor farming, plowing or sowing, not of handling horses or cattle. Only one thing did the farmer teach them. hill and vale to wander, hunting the noble stag. Through the forest one day they bounded, a-hunting all strong sons and brothers, huntsmen all. Further still they wandered. They hunted on, and further still, further they wandered. Still longer and longer they hunted, on and on. Lost in the forest, yet still they hunted on, until deep in the forest lay a haunted, magical bridge. Wondrous large stags had crossed it. Excited for the kill, they wandered over the haunted bridge. Crossing the bridge, all nine brothers and sons were changed into stags there in the forest shadows. Slender stags, changed from men, roaming through the enchanted forest past the magic bridge. At last, the loving father, missing his strong and handsome sons, set forth to find them. On he roamed to where the bridge lay. Crossing the bridge, he lost his sons' tracks. In their place, he found the hoof prints of large and wondrous stags. Forgetting his sons at the sight of such animals to hunt, the father squeezed his rifle and swiftly followed their trail. On he followed the tracks and reached at last a wellspring of water with nine stags standing close by. Falling down on one knee, raising a steady gun, he sighted on the leader and began to pull the trigger. But the largest stag of all the sons, his dearest, called out to his father, "Dearest, loving father, aim not at thy children, or surely our antlers must pierce thee and pin thee, hammer and hurl thee, crashing valley to valley, boulder to boulder, and mountain to mountain. We will dash thee, smash thee, slash thee, crashing cliff to crater, till thy flesh be paste and bones be powder. Naught but dust will survive thee, dearest father." Then the loving father, grieving, called to his children, pleading, "Oh, dearest loved ones, oh, my darling children, come, oh, come and follow me home now. Your sweet mother waits. Come thou now and follow home. Come with me, my children. Your mother stands waiting, lonely, loving, grieving. The lanterns are lit. The table is set. The glasses are filled. The glasses are filled to the brimming. So, too, are your mother's eyes." Yet again the leader, dearest of all the children, called aloud and answered thus unto his father, "Dearest, loving father, you must go back. Go home now. You must go to our lovely, sweet mother. But where you go, we cannot follow." "Why can you not come home?" answered the father. The stag continued, "We shall never return because our antlers cannot pass thy doorway, only roam through glen and groves. Our slender bodies cannot fit in clothes, only wear wind and sun. Our graceful legs can never stand on the brick floors. They were made to tread the leafy mold of the forest floor. Our mouths can no longer drink from crystal glasses, only mountain springs." Once there was an old man whose treasure was nine strong and handsome sons. The nine sons thought nothing of work, neither trade nor farming, but only to hunt. Hunting farther and farther they wandered. All were changed to stags in the forest shadows, and so their antlers cannot pass through doorways, only roam the forest groves.